You're listening to Psych Talk.
I'm Jose Dras Lopez, and this is Psych Talk. Our shows are recorded live at WCOM, a radio station in Carrboro, North Carolina. You can find all our recorded shows online at psychtalkradio.com. That's P-S-Y-C-H, talkradio.com. In this show, we're getting to know someone who is a seasoned performer, a spiritual counselor, and also a friend of mine. A new Brode has performed improv with Transactors since joining in 1997. Transactors is the longest-running active improvisational company in the South. And this is my own cheeky comment. No, the trans in the name Transactors does not refer to gender or sexual identity. Anu has taught improv to people of all ages at businesses, schools, and art centers across the Southeast. She has also experimented with film and traditional theater, including performing in the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland in 2011. Aside from improv and acting, she is a spiritual counselor and intuitive. Two things to know before we jump in. In the live show, I mispronounced Anu's last name. She'll make fun of me for that. And we mentioned an opportunity to get an intuitive reading by calling in. Now here's the interview. Anu, thanks so much for joining us.
You are welcome. I'm super excited to be here. My last name is Brode.
Oh.
Everybody always gets it wrong.
And you know, that's one thing I usually ask every guest, but I just assumed.
Yes.
Anu Brode.
Yes, Anu Tree Brode.
Anu Tree Brode. Well, I will re-record that and it'll be fine.
Oh, okay. But you know, in improv, we say highlight the mistakes.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we are talking about improv today, aren't we?
That's one of the things.
In improv, though, there's an imaginary element to what's going on. So if a scene began and someone called you Anu Brode, that would just be your name. Whereas I think in this case, your name is still Anu Brode.
But I do think, not to go off on a tangent before you ask me the questions, I do think that there's something about a carryover from improv into life with that concept that if you make a mistake, instead of shoving it down or covering it over, bring it into the light, make it funny, make it big, enjoy it. Because we're all making mistakes all the frickin' time. Can I say frickin'?
Yeah, you can definitely say frickin'. FCC is perfectly fine with that. The other similar sounding word FCC doesn't like so much.
I will stay away. It'll be hard for me, but I will.
I was thinking about my last name, which I recently changed from Lopez to Drost Lopez.
Uh-huh.
And I mean Drost to sort of rhyme with frost and sort of spelled with frost with a D instead. But so many people say Drost. And I just think, oh man, I tried to spell it phonetically, but there's just no way to be sure.
We are both doomed. Yeah. We are both doomed in the name department.
I want to mention the intuitive reading.
What is intuitive readings? What are they?
Yeah.
I pretty much open up. It's really very similar to improv. I open up and I call in what I call my angels, my guides, master spirits. And I usually do that for the person I'm working with too. So all the higher beings are here with us helping both of us out and ask that whatever the person who I'm talking to most needs to know at this time come through. So kind of set a little prayer intention. And then I just kind of open up and see what happens. Sometimes what happens is I'm guided to be really quiet and just let the person talk. Sometimes what happens is I'm guided to say certain words that sound really boring or simple to me, but I have to trust it and say that. Sometimes I'm guided to ask questions. My job is to stay open, to be an open channel and let whatever needs to come through, which is also true for improv.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for the explanation.
Oh, you're welcome.
So let's talk about improv. It seems like improv is tied to life. It can be tied to spirituality. It can be a lot of things. Before we talk about sort of the principles and how it can connect to things, though, let's just assume that there's some listeners who've never seen an improv performance before and help them with that. So it's a form of live theater, right? That's the basics.
Yes.
And instead of it having a script, there's the audience somehow providing feedback, giving suggestions that inspire the performers to make something up on the spot.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. That is all true, yeah. No script, no props, no blocking, no costumes. So everything we do is made up in the moment. And so things like creating characters, well, we don't have costumes. So we really need to work on having the voice and the physicality of the character so that we don't have to say, I'm being an old lady right now, you know, or hey, you over there that I'm playing with, I'm a teenage girl. Like, no, it'll come through vocal choices, body language, all of that kind of thing.
So yeah, you're starting to explain sort of the craft, and also that it's unlike a normal play, air quotes, because of the lack of costumes and set and script in the background. So it's inviting the audience to use their imagination through the power of the improvisational acting.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting way of saying it. Yeah, I mean, improv definitely requires a lot of imagination. So that's a really good word. So yeah, inviting the audience to do that, and the performers have to rely on imagination. It just kind of pops into my mind that I remember being in a scene with somebody once and I was smoking a fake cigarette. And later on, the person I was in the scene with was like, oh my gosh, I could totally see the smoke curling up. And it's like, yeah, that's what happens. I don't know how and I don't know why. But for some reason, when we throw ourselves into the play of it, the visuals are really, really real, even though nothing is there except air between your fingers, you know?
And that ability to visualize so readily, do you see that cropping up in other parts of your life that are not improv?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, absolutely, with the intuitive readings, I'm very much a kinesthetic person, so I get a lot of my information physically, a lot of my intuitive information physically, but I also do get, like, visions will come to me. Visions or a visual will come to me during a reading.
Yeah.
And then also just using visualization for personal goals and stuff like that.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, Anu, you're sort of our celebrity of the hour. We're trying to get to know you. And
okay.
One thing that I want to hear related to improv is what the backstory is, how you got into it, mm-hmm. and what your first impressions were.
Fun. I got into it because I was really, really shy in college. That's not why I got into it. But this kind of correlates with my intuition experience. I was really committed at that time in my life to beginning to explore my intuition. And I kept getting this intuition, take an acting class. So I tried a couple of times in college and it didn't work out with my schedule. And then I took one when I was living in California. I took one and the guy talked most of the time and I was like, nah, I don't want to do this. So I moved out to North Carolina and, you know, it was still in the back of my head. I had gotten a little money for my birthday and I flipped through the Carborough Art Center catalog and signed up for an improv class without thinking of it. And I remember, like, a couple of days before the improv class started, I should say this was in 1996, I think. So it was before improv got to be big. A lot of people didn't know what it was. And I remember thinking, oh, crap. Can I say crap?
Yeah.
Improv, does that mean I have to be funny? You know, I kind of had this panic a couple days before. But anyway, I went to the class and still pretty shy at the time. And it was just one of those things I'll never forget. I just fell madly, madly in love. And I went over to a friend's house who I was hanging out with at the time. And I remember kind of jumping on his bed and saying, I want to do this every day for the rest of my life. And I love that story because there was something so unknowingly prophetic about that. I'm pretty much doing it every day for the rest of my life now. And sometimes I wish I hadn't said that. I'm like, no, give me a couple days break. Just kidding. I love it. Yeah.
So basically, improv was your in into acting and theater. There wasn't that much before that.
No, there was nothing before that. I mean, no high school play, no college play.
A second grade playing Goldilocks.
Okay. Yes, There was one single one. I took an acting class when I was, I think, in second grade. That was very intuitive of you, Jose. And I played a dog, so I didn't have any words. But I had a full dog outfit that somebody loaned to me, and when I walked out on stage, everyone was like, aww. And I mean, even as my little 7-year-old self, I just loved being adored. I was like, yeah, they awed me, man.
that's a good feeling.
It's a great feeling. So I must have stuffed that away somewhere. And it's funny, I looked back on something that I wrote in first or second grade, and it's like one of those fill in the blank kind of things. It's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I wrote actress. And I mean, this is not something that, had you asked me when I was 12 or 14 or 15 or 16 or 17, you know, I never would have thought that. So it's interesting how these things kind of full circle come back around.
Yeah, we hold on to some of what we were when we were very young.
Yes.
We can come back to it.
Yes.
After some detours.
And it's funny, in my coaching and counseling work, that's what I really encourage people to do is, what did you love when you were a little kid? You know, that's really, really going to pull you back to who you really are.
Tell us about your first improv teachers. Do you have any memories of what they were like or what you thought about them?
I have a lot of memories about what they're like because they're actually the people I'm in a company with right now. So my first teachers at the Art Center, Corbett Art Center, were Dan Sipp and Greg Hone. And wow, how lucky did I get to kind of hop right into my future with that class. Gosh, it's so funny to talk about who they were then because I've known them now for, 16 years or so. But I found them intimidating as a shy little being, these professional actors. Mm-hmm. But I loved what they taught. It just resonated. I loved that they taught this idea of this thing called commitment, being totally confident on stage no matter what you feel inside or what you're saying. That really resonated with me. Greg really, gosh, they both helped me so much. But Greg, I remember a moment where I was doing a monologue and I was, saying something and I just had this blank out. And he asked me afterwards, well, what did you want to say there? I was seeing a poster. And I said, well, I wanted the poster to be of Michelle Pfeiffer. And he said, well, why didn't you just say that? And I was like, oh, such a simple moment, but it's kind of seared in my memory of like, go with that thing. Go with the thing that's in your mind. Don't make it more complicated than it needs to be. So awesome teachers and now awesome cohorts. And yeah, I kind of was saying recently, they're my improv soulmates. Like there's just such a chemistry working with them, just so easy.
So as they became your soulmates, I'm assuming that the veneer of intimidation went away. Now they're just...
Yeah, I would say it's been a long process of like kind of taking them off the pedestal. Sorry, guys, you're off my pedestal now, but I still adore you. And then just being on the same level. Definitely a long process. It wasn't like, okay, now we're in the company together. No.
Yeah. I'm interested that you said that 1996 improv not very well known.
Yeah.
And it seems like you're saying that it's changed, that improv is much better known now.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you trace that a bit for us or what you've noticed over time?
Yeah, I'm not that great with timelines, but I'm going to estimate about 12 years ago. Who knows if I'm anywhere in the ballpark. That things started popping. Things started really, like, I don't know what happened in the consciousness of the world, but improv was welcome and needed, and it just started exploding. And, early on in the days, I would say I did improv, and I would mostly get, oh, what is that? And I'd have to explain, which was great. It was totally fine. I actually liked the quirkiness of it. But now you just never get that. I shouldn't say never. It's just very rare that somebody doesn't know, or somebody doesn't think of whose line is it anyway, or,
right,
something like that.
Yeah, there's some new follow-up to Whose Line It Anyway. I think it's called Trust Us With Your Life.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, with some of the same performers. But now it's based on an interview with the celebrity, and then they reenact scenes
that.
From their life. Like they did it with Serena Williams, I think.
Did you see it?
I saw part of it when I was getting my car fixed.
Okay.
I'm no authority on that. But it's funny, yeah, how improv has gone on the big national stage.
Yeah, kind of exploded, like in a big, big way. Yep.
And maybe also within acting communities, it seems like just stage actors will use improv as a way to warm up and hone their skills.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably been going on longer. Mm. I think there's been a crossover between regular theater acting and improv. But it's just in the air. It's in the water right now. And corporations, businesses, all that kind of stuff are kind of hooked into the power of improv, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of the power of improv, I wanted to name drop Stephen Colbert and Tina Fey, who are two favorite people of mine.
Okay.
Both improv veterans.
Yeah.
And they both said publicly, and Tina Fey wrote a book, Colbert has done lots of interviews, they both say the basic principles of commitment and agreement in improv are really helpful, like in their relationships, like with Colbert with his wife.
Yeah.
And I was sort of curious to explore that a little bit with you.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I guess what immediately pops into my mind, this is a story I sometimes tell, is I did a workshop. I led a workshop in Oregon, and one of my best friends lives out there, and her partner came, her now husband. They got married. Whoops, I'm not sure I'm supposed to say that on air. But anyway, it's like a secret. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking about that. They came to the workshop, and, you know, I did my usual thing. I certainly wasn't tailoring it to them or to their relationship, but they just raved about how the idea of yes and, like you just said, agreement helped their relationship and how they took it home of their own accord and just started practicing yes and with each other. So, you know, somebody says something and instead of like, yeah, but da-da-da-da-da-da, yeah, yep, yep, that's a really good idea. And da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And the harmony that can come from those two words.
And it's something different than what our impulses might take us to in everyday life.
Yeah.
We do a lot of no butting.
Yep.
Instead of yes anding.
Or yes butting.
Yeah.
Yes, but I'm just going to tell you why no. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Yeah.
And full disclosure, I've taken improv classes with you.
Full disclosure. Let's do it.
No holds barred.
The truth is coming out here,
close
people.
Close your children's ears.
Jose is taking improv from me, you guys. Okay.
Yeah. And I've only done it for a year, so I'm deferring to you, but I can relate to what you're saying. So I want the listeners to understand that. One way I can relate is noticing people on stage trying to practice yes and having so much trouble because they're just always so tempted to shut down some part of the other person's ideas.
Yeah.
And total acceptance is like this radical new thing, even when you're told to do it.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I like can't stop telling stories. May I?
Stories are perfect.
So I was teaching an intro class here. I keep saying here at the Art Center because the station is right next to the Art Center. I was teaching an intro class that ended last night at the Art Center, and it was kind of one of those "yay, it's working" kind of moments where two students were in a scene, and a third person had to kind of freeze them and come in and start a new scene. So the third person came in. And he was like, okay, down. Everybody get down. And he started leading them in these kind of bizarre things. It was really funny scene. You had to kind of be there. But, you know, they're doing push-ups. They're running to the edge of the stage. They're running back. And the third person's like really like the authority in the scene. And we were talking about it afterwards. And we were like, what were you doing? And they were like, I don't know. And usually that doesn't work. But because all three of them were so yes-anding each other, it was so much fun to watch, even though we had no idea what they were doing. Anyway, that's part of the story. But the other part was one of the students who was yes-anding said he had an immediate thing where he wanted to say no. And he wanted to be like, what are we doing? And then this is the golden moment for me as a teacher, he said, and then I heard your voice in my head anew. And your voice was saying, just go with it. Just go with it. And so I did. And I was like, yes! And it was brilliant.
Success.
You guys nailed it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And that story reminds me of one other thing I've seen on stage where there's people are sort of playing with different statuses.
Yeah.
So in that case, there's someone who took over and is the one giving orders.
Yeah.
And that's an improv exercise to say you're going to be high status, you're going to be low status.
Yes.
And it's funny to see people who are usually low status try to be high status or people who are high being low, because it's not something you necessarily perceive, even though it's the water we swim in, where some people are more deferential and giving up power.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just so fascinating to struggle with it yourself and then to start noticing it in everyday interactions.
Yeah. It is interesting to think about status. I remember being really resistant when I was taught this, that there's always status when two people are talking. And I'm like, no, there's not. We're all equal. Like, woo. And I still hold on to that. But probably in subtle ways, there may be a slight upper status or lower status. Who knows?
Yeah. I don't just mean like class differences.
No, I wasn't taking it that way.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's the first thing I thought when I was introduced to it. Like, oh, you mean like one person's richer than the other?
Oh, that's so funny. That never even crossed my mind. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
To me, it was about inner power and energy. Isn't that so funny?
You were definitely got the gist of it much faster than I did.
Yeah, I was just thinking like, wow, isn't that interesting the way each of our minds work?
Just like probably when you heard transactor, you probably didn't think transgender.
Because once again, the company's been around so long that that was not hip in the water and in the air at the time. But now it is.
Yeah,
so people
now
do
the
think
trans
that.
Community is a big
thing. Yeah, it's huge. So yeah, I definitely didn't think it in 1996. but yeah.
Good. Do you have like an overall goal for improv at this point as a teacher, yeah. as someone who's done it for so long and learned so many things from it already?
Yeah.
Is there something that when you get on stage you're trying to speak to and accomplish for yourself?
I think the answer is no, but let me explore it a little bit. Rather than yeah. just shutting you down. No.
Well, it's fine. I guess it's almost like you can trust your unconscious and you can trust the moment enough that you don't need to give yourself a mantra or anything.
Yeah.
But I'm just
yeah.
thinking of like why mm-hmm. I've come into it in the last
sure.
year. As a beginner, you think a little bit more about like, why am I paying for this class or why am I doing yeah. this instead of something else? And I sort of like the empathy building that comes with it and like making yourself a little more versatile and jumping into mm-hmm. different person's emotions.
Nice.
And so I like that aspect of it, mm-hmm. which is also just something in general with acting.
Mm-hmm.
But you get to do it so much more quickly and spontaneously in improv.
Yeah. I mean, I could speak for hours on the benefits of improv, you know, to a person. But for me, when I'm on stage, it really is about kind of like what I said with my readings. It's just about being fully in the moment and letting the energy come through and surprising myself and surprising the audience and having a lot of fun. And you do. You just have so much fun when you're that present, you know, not trying to plan what's going to happen.
Yeah. I wanted to give you an opportunity to plug Transactors and
sure.
elaborate on them a bit.
Okay.
Where have you performed? Where can people find you?
Oh, that's actually a great question. We will be performing this Friday night at Common Ground Theater, and I hope I get this right. I think it's CG Theater with a R-E-T-R-E. Sorry if I'm getting that wrong.
You just Google Common Ground Theater.
Google Common Ground in Durham. We'll be performing there at 8 p.m. doing a long-form piece called On Deck, mm-hmm. where we have different decks built into the theater at Common Ground. And so one deck will be a truth deck, and one deck will be a flashback deck. I think that the other deck may be a secret. But anyway, so we'll be doing a regular long-form improv, but then you'll get to see these characters in these different decks as well. Come see it. It'll be fun.
Cool.
8 o'clock, Common Ground this Friday night.
All right. Go
yeah.
see it.
Yeah, yeah.
You have the Psych Talk WCOM endorsement.
Nice. Thank you.
So Transactors. I want to keep talking about Transactors. That's
yep.
a performance you can go see it for yourself, but we're
yep,
going to
yep.
talk about it. Is there like an approach to Transactors, a methodology or philosophy, or is it also sort of see what happens?
You know, I do think that there's an approach, and I hope I'm getting this right if any Transactors are listening, but we really come at improv from more of a theatrical viewpoint. So we're not as interested in the goofy, I mean, I don't mean goofy in a bad way, but in the goofy games or the quick laughs. There will be a lot of laughs generally at our shows, but we like to get to those laughs in a very organic kind of character-based way so that the characters have integrity. They're not just saying something that's going to, you know, get this quick laugh and then there's nowhere that the scene can go. We're really watching characters and watching them evolve and connect with other characters.
Yeah, I think that's interesting you use the word organic. It seems like as improv has gotten bigger, there have been more different styles and schools that have started
yeah.
to branch out. And one of them seems mm-hmm. to be like organic versus sort of prepared with a like a quick punchline or
mm-hmm.
setup.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking of DSI, for example, which is mm-hmm. just another Carborough neighbor. I think they're not as organic. I think they more come in like, we're the most judgmental firefighters. Okay, go.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do all the funny things mm-hmm. that judgmental firefighters do.
It might
do.
Be a little quicker pace, poppier. I don't know. Maybe not as character-based. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
So then when you do this organic character-based exploration, sometimes it's actually sort of dramatic, right? Or it's not
yeah.
like you're just waiting to like for the next laugh and you're just baiting people along for that, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, honestly, it's a combination. We're all pretty funny. I think it's safe to say that. And we all like making people laugh. So I'm not going to say it's none of that because that would be kind of a lie. But I guess a popular term right now is grounded improv. You know, we're just not jumping around trying to get you to laugh at every little thing. We want our laughs to come from a little bit more place of truth, perhaps like, oh my God, I can totally relate to that kind of thing.
Right. So sort of relationship based.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. I've had that with my mother or with my brother.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you want to talk more about that, Jose?
Well, we only have so little time. I'm going to try to keep this about you.
Okay.
One thing I've seen in your classes and in a workshop I've done with you recently is that you tie in concepts from Eastern spirituality, essentially, and they almost feel Buddhist to me about being mindful and in the moment and present. And that's not necessarily the way you think about it. I'm seeing you sort of saying...
Am not a Buddhist, but yeah, I think you're totally right. But go ahead with your question.
Anyway, the question is just, do you see improv as some sort of meditative practice, or how different is it from just like a mindfulness practice?
Well, I can't speak too much to mindfulness practices because I wouldn't say I'm an expert in that. But, you know, what is meditation? I think that's a really interesting question. Isn't it really about being in the moment? So in that case, improv is a form of meditation, as is pottery, music, gardening for me, anything, petting your cat, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm a really big believer in, just to kind of tie back to my other passion, spirituality, making spirituality easy and light and joyful. And so I think a lot of people approach a lot of things, including meditation, with this heavy idea of I have to sit on this mat and I've got to meditate and clear my freaking mind right now. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'd much rather, you know, take a walk in the woods and smell the air and listen to the sounds and be in the moment in that way, or do improv, or...
So it's sort of like you can't be a perfectionist improv performer who thinks, oh, I have to say something slightly different. I need to go back.
Yeah.
And similarly, being a perfectionist meditator is sort of an oxymoron.
Yeah, it is. It totally is. But I think you're totally right that improv does tie into... I mean, the workshop that you were at was called Be Here Now, which is an old, you know... spiritual phrase, or I don't know what you want to call it. So yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's such a fun, great training to get yourself to be more, to get out of your head. Yeah. Like, that's the goal, right? Getting out of your head. Whoops. Sorry, I just knocked the microphone. Hope you can still hear me.
The microphone can take a lot of kisses. It's pretty good.
Microphone. You're so beautiful. yeah, getting out of your head's huge. You know,
one interesting aspect to me about it is that you're getting at your head and you're doing it with a community, with a group of people.
Yeah.
And the way that'd be different from like a quiet, trying to be present meditation practice.
Yeah.
Somewhere else.
That's true.
So you're being disinhibited and then you're bouncing off of other people too.
Yeah. There's so much going on. It's true. When you're talking about improv, I don't know how we do it.
But you do it.
But we do it.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about improv performers as a community, since this we're sort of already talking about how you build community in a classroom or in a rehearsal. It's also a community as in just different performance groups getting to know each other and comparing notes or trying out different things. And then there are festivals every once in a while. TransActors goes to improv festivals.
Yeah.
So tell us about that scene. The way I had written a note to myself was, if I were an alien anthropologist beamed down and saying, who are these improv performers? What are they about and what sets them apart? What's your feel for that?
Interesting. Ooh, that's another good question. I don't know. I'll go with words that are popping into my mind. Poppy. I feel like there's a poppy energy with improvisers. I'll give you an example. I'm big on the examples. I was in Chicago this last weekend doing a theater gig, and I stopped into the Gap. And because I had a few minutes to kill and I needed a shirt. And this guy was checking me out. He was checking me out while I was buying something from him.
Okay.
He was at the checkout counter and we were talking, we were having a really fun conversation.
It's okay if he was checking you out.
I cannot speak to that. But we were having a really fun conversation and he said something to me and I said, I said, oh, I'm not from here. I don't live in Chicago. Where do you live? I live in Chapel Hill. And he was like, oh, you know, do you know, this is so crazy, but do you know, just in case, do you know blah, blah, blah? And I was like, yeah, I know blah, blah, blah. He's an improviser. And I'm like, I'm an improviser. I teach and perform improv. He's like, so do I. And we just had this great conversation. We were both super open, super excited, and super poppy. Like, we weren't like yes-anding each other like in a scene, but there was this very much quick, quick, quick back and forth flow between us. And I think that's oftentimes present with improvisers.
Yeah.
Poppy energy.
Something, and it seems like it's something that you build from improvising mm-hmm. rather than something that you need to have coming into it.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, someone else, we went out for drinks after our last night of intro class last night, and one of the guys was saying, I was asking them how they all got in, decided to take the class, and one of the guys on the class said, let me use names. John was in my class, and he was saying, I was getting to know this guy, Bart, who has been taking classes from me anew. I know there's a lot of different people for years. And he said, you know, I just noticed that he was really spontaneous and outgoing. And he said, and I found out he did improv, and I thought, you know, I bet that could help me be that way too. So I think you're right. I think, I mean, I'm not saying that this guy, Bart, was like this stick in the mud before he took classes with me, but he probably was. No, I'm just kidding. But I think you can either come into it with that energy, or you can begin to build that energy the more comfortable you get. And I certainly built that energy. You know, I said I was really, really shy when I came in. And it's not for me. I wouldn't even say I built that energy, but improv helped me shed the parts of me that weren't actually really me so that I could be the poppy person that I am. I don't know why I keep saying poppy, but, you know, that's kind of my natural energy.
When you keep saying poppy, I sort of think not boring, but I feel bad for thinking that.
No, don't feel bad.
Other people out there who don't do improv, you're interesting too.
No, absolutely. Gosh, I totally agree with that. Everybody's so interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing about improv. It's made me do more sort of people watching and observing.
Yeah.
In a more earnest and interested way.
Yeah, because you can kind of create character. Like, how is that person walking? Or how does that person, like, you just kind of raised your eyes and kind of smiled. And it's like, huh, what if I tried that on? What would that character be like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love this discussion of improv. I want to do a little more of it, and then we're going to sort of switch gears.
Okay.
But I'm going to play a little music. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
I'm going to make sure that the phone's ringer is working.
Okay.
And we will be back. Stay tuned. This is WCOM. All right, so we have a call-in from Sherry. And
woohoo!
Sherry, you still with us?
Yes, yes I am.
Hey, Sherry.
Hey, I have a comment and a question. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, my comment is, I've been taking improv classes for years, you know, with Tree, with Anew, with others, and I feel like it's changed my life for the better. I feel like I bring it to work. I teach public speaking, and I bring improv exercises into class as confidence boosters and team building. And I feel like I am a more expressive person, and I'm able to be more in the moment because of improv. So I really, really appreciate that, you know, and I appreciate knowing how to yes and all of that. So that's my comment, is just that it's brought so much to my life.
Woohoo! Testimonial, baby.
Yay. Yeah. Yay. And my question is, when I'm in classes or when I'm in rehearsals or when I'm using it in real life, there's so much fun. There's such an element of being able to do what you want to do without being judged. And I feel like for me that goes away a little bit when I'm in front of an audience
mm-hmm.
because I feel like I am being judged.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to know, as an experienced performer, did you ever experience that feeling of this just isn't as much fun when there's an audience there?
Mm.
Or do you have any advice for me how to get back to that fun place where it doesn't matter and I could say what I want to say without worrying?
Yeah. Luckily, I would say at this point, I wouldn't say it's not as much fun when I'm performing. Sometimes we have those kind of golden rehearsals where we're like, oh my God, nothing could be more fun than this. And we wish there was an audience there. But, you know, as a performer by nature, I do enjoy the audience and that feedback. It's kind of an intuitive reading question, too. because to me, I see it as a spiritual question. I guess I see everything as a spiritual question, but it's a practice about the mind frame that you're in. So, you know, if your focus is on I am being judged, that's going to be a really uncomfortable experience. But if your focus is on I have a gift that I'm giving to the audience and how much fun this is to share this gift. Wow. Well, that's not about how they see me. It's about what I'm giving them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that is so helpful. I totally appreciate that.
I would shift.
Hoping we could totally squeeze in an intuitive reading. So I love that.
I would shift the intention, you know, work on shifting the mindset and the intention and think about what you can give rather than what you can get.
Right, that the audience is just there, relaxed, waiting for a gift.
Yeah, don't even think about what the audience is doing. Just think about what you're giving.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, and I really appreciate the show. It's been so interesting.
Thank you for calling, Sherry.
Yeah, thanks so much. I think
my pleasure.
Sherry, have you helped teach a class with a new?
Yes,
I have. I'm an assistant. When you subbed for me. Down, I'm the assistant.
You subbed for me.
I think we've met. And I think you were helping us build characters.
Yes, she's so good at that.
That is true. I remember you. I didn't think you'd remember me because it was just one occasion.
She's an amazing teacher. Oh, she's an amazing teacher and actually an amazing improviser. So plug for Sherry.
So yeah. I really appreciate that vote of confidence. Anyway, thank you so much for taking the call. Thank you for the show. And I appreciate the advice.
Okay. All right. Take care.
All right. Take care.
That was so fun. Can we give the number out again? Because that was just too fun.
Yeah. So the number is 919-929-9601. And we'll pick up the phone. Just give us a call.
969-9201. No, 929.
Yes.
I just messed it up.
919-929-9601. That's WCOM's call-in number. You could call us anytime, really, during any show at 929-9601. You could even donate money at 929-9601.
Okay. All right. We get it.
All right. Yeah. We're not NPR. We're not going to bug you too much. We're having a membership pledge drive, and you can donate our car to us. Anyway. Let it be known for the record that Sherry inspired me to play a female 26-year-old as my character.
Oh, I was there.
You were.
Why were we both there? Okay, you were great.
Oh, thanks.
You were really good as a female, I gotta say.
I've gotten that before. Let it also be known for the record that I won a cross-dressing competition in high school.
Nice. Maybe all of this is why you were focused on the trans and trans actors.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay, let's not go that far. I'm not picking up anything intuitively around that.
Well, you never
just
know.
Just to be clear.
Well, let's see. I wanted to ask you, and this might trigger stories. What are some of the crazier things you've done on stage or in practice? Crazy by whatever definition. Whatever memorable characters you've played or situations. I mean, I've heard, you know, more goofy type things like, oh, I was asked to play two penises once. And I think, oh, okay, well, that's an interesting improv story. How did that happen? So there's sometimes it's like, how did you get there? But sometimes it's more like I played my little sister. And it was sort of strange being her for a scene.
Right. Gosh, the funny thing that I think is like, I don't remember. It's like you do the show and then it's gone. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's doesn't seem like the point is to remember it all.
Yeah. I mean, some people are better about that than I am. I would say that's a definite weak spot of mine is remembering, but just in general.
I can totally empathize and commiserate with that.
Really?
I can't remember, you know, what I did yesterday or last week. So.
Yeah, like Monday people are like, how was your weekend? And you're like, weekend.
I guess one of those did happen recently.
Yeah, like what did I do? Yeah.
Okay.
All right, there you go.
I accept. Yes,
okay.
Yes, and.
Awesome.
And the ending part is let's transition a little to spirituality.
Love
Cause,
it.
Because you were just doing a bit of a reading.
Yeah.
And we were it's come up and I introduced you as an intuitive.
Yeah.
So let's get into that meat and potatoes.
Cool.
And there are different ways of describing it. Sometimes you could say you're a life coach, Mm-hmm. Some people respond better.
I'm certified life coach, but I think of myself more as a spiritual counselor. Like that term kind of resonates down through my inner being more than coach. Coach I see as like someone who motivates people and and I'm like, I'm not really interested in that. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think you're right to be a little reluctant about that word coach because I've seen a couple people's reactions to it. I was talking to a fellow WCOMer, and I was asking her, would you like to talk to an intuitive life coach? And she said, well, I'd love to talk to her, but I don't know about coaching because I'm sort of at the end of my life, actually. And I don't want someone to be telling me to try to motivate me to do something in particular. That's not what I need right now.
Wow.
Was
this an
authentic.
Older person or a sick person?
Yeah, both, basically.
That's a great little anecdote. I have no interest in telling people what to do, like in general, like none, zippo. But I am interested in passing along guidance that comes through. So, you know, if someone's at the end of their life, what generally will happen and come through in a reading is exactly what they need to know. And that's actually true whether they're at the end of their life or the beginning or the middle. Like, you know, because you're kind of tapped into this higher consciousness. I mean, not that I don't make mistakes because I do, and not that I don't get things wrong because I do, but generally what comes through is exactly what that person's soul needs at that precise moment. How does it happen? God, hell if I know, or heck if I know, or whatever. I mean, I do kind of know. I'm kind of joking, but I am still in awe of the process. Even though I participate, I kind of sit back and watch too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so we were doing a little bit of nitpicking on the word coach, or I was nitpicking on that with my anecdote. I do want to talk about terminology because, intuitive is, I guess, leaves a lot open to an I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm not that familiar with this territory.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll just sort of open up to you to help make distinctions about what's the difference between being spiritual and being intuitive.
Ooh, another tricky question. The difference between being spiritual. Well, I think you can be really intuitive and just not be a spiritual person. You can have psychic experiences. Oh, you know what that makes me think of is I caught this show. I don't know if anyone's seen it called America's Psychic Challenge or something. It's one of these reality shows, but it takes psychics and does a bunch of tests on them, and you kind of get eliminated as you go on. Hmm. And there's this one woman on there, and she is she's what a lot of people might call like a dark energy, an intense energy, whatever. I'm not sure that she's thinking about spirituality in the way that I would, which is about connection and open-heartedness and that sort of thing. But she's very intuitive. She's got an extreme psychic gift. It's just incredible. So that's kind of a good, for me, a good visual of what someone who's intuitive but not spiritual is. And then, of course, there's lots and lots of spiritual people who live life in a very, mindful, open-hearted kind of way, but might not feel that they're the most intuitive people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So So it's helpful to tease those apart a little bit.
Yeah.
And so let's just focus on one at a time then. Spirituality, a lot of people will think of church and gods and that sort of thing. What comes to mind for you with spirituality, and how much does it contrast with, you know, just Christianity or traditional religions?
Oh, gosh. Such a big question.
We can bite little pieces.
Okay,
out of it.
Let's give me a little piece.
Yeah,
it's a great question though. I wish we had like 3 days.
Do you need special rituals, or do you need to go to some kind of church or location in order to be spiritual?
Gotcha. Of course, no. Mm. I shouldn't say of course no, but no. In my opinion, no. We are all connected at every single moment. Right here is a spiritual experience. So do you need to? No. Do some people find that that helps their connection? Yes. Do I find that being out in nature helps my connection? Yes. So it's really about what works for you. Is it being in the ocean? Is it reading inspiring books? Is it being with animals? There's so many ways that we can reconnect with our spirituality, but our spirituality isn't some place out there. It's inside.
Yeah. Well, one other angle that I think people can relate to is looking for spiritual leaders or someone to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of different models for that. It could be like Meher Baba in India or Buddha or Jesus and Muhammad.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if you have particular people or groups that you look to for special inspiration. And if so, are those just for you? Or does everyone have their own? Or would you recommend a certain, you know?
Would I recommend what?
Like a specific leader or source of inspiration, a specific book.
Oh gosh, there's too many books, and it just depends on the person and what they need at this time. But I definitely have a very deep connection to the angelic realm and angels, spirit guides. I was brought up Jewish, but funnily enough, kind of got to know Jesus a few years ago when hanging out with a friend of mine. We'd be having these really deep spiritual conversations, and he'd be like, whoa, Jesus just came here. And I started just kind of feeling the energy of that being. So I don't have all the crap that people have around Jesus. Like, there's no brainwashing in me. There's just kind of an understanding of who that master teacher is in my own heart. So I have a really great respect for that being, Jesus. I have a lot of friends who are Baba lovers, Meher Baba, and I feel some connection to that too. So, you know, I'm just kind of all over. I wouldn't say I'm all over. I find that connection a lot of places, but I definitely am not anti-religion, and I'm not. Yeah. Did that answer the question? I kind of jumped around in that one.
Yeah, no, it was a big question. That does answer it. So I'm trying to sort of get at I'm imagining different listeners. So I feel like a listener who's does go to church might feel like a little defensive or a little confused. And it's just interesting how much religious territory can spread in different directions, spiritual territory. People have such different ideas about it. And I was telling you off air that I've done some interviews about atheist and secular spirituality, mm-hmm. and that's like also that's a topic where that really pushes at people's boundaries of what they understand as spiritual or religious. So I sort of want to bounce that topic back to you. Do you think you need to believe in any god or divinity to be spiritual?
No, I mean definitely not. To me, it's core to my spirituality. I can't imagine not believing in God or believing in energies beyond, you know, here and now. But do you need to? No. I know people who are very spiritual who don't believe in any of that stuff, but believe in love, yeah. Believe in people, believe in the planet, whatever.
Yeah. Well, Anu, this is not something you've talked about much in public before, right? This sort of...
Yeah.
Intuitive, spiritual
angle
of yourself.
I'm definitely coming out of the closet slowly but surely. But go ahead. Cut you off.
Yeah, well, that's just what I wanted to dwell on that just for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a side of yourself that you've just been opening up to friends more recently and that you just – it was a more personal in the past?
No, I would definitely say the people close to me have known about it for okay. forever. I just was much more careful about what I shared, to a greater audience, just because there is so much, there's a lot of judgment. And it's funny, you were saying, I think that the Christians might feel defensive. I don't have any problems with Christians and I don't feel any defensiveness around Christians. I get defensive around pretty hardcore atheists. That's my button that can really get my little inner warrior just, you want some of this? Let's go.
I have some friends I could put you in touch with. I could get them a call.
Great.
Battle.
Yeah. So yeah, I can't remember what the question was, but yeah.
So probably Richard Dawkins wouldn't be your favorite person to have a lunch with. Oh, I'll explain who Richard Dawkins is. He wrote a book called The God Delusion. He advocates what he calls militant atheism.
Yeah, I'd want to punch him in the face and watch like blood come out of his nose.
Wow. Again, the truth, a no holds barred truth. Another time to cover your children's ears. Anu is a very non-violent, pacifistic gentle person.
I am, but I enjoy playing with my inner rage sometimes. Okay.
Have you heard of the they're four horsemen of the atheist apocalypse, as they're known? They're called that sort of tongue in cheek because they're all very militant, or there's something sort of acerbic about them. And
I haven't heard of them.
So there's Christopher Hitchens, who wrote a book called God Is Not Great. It's sort of a tirade against religiosity. There's a Sam Harris. He's wrote the, like the End of Christian Faith or Letters to a Christian Nation, something like that. And Daniel Dennett, some gray bearded philosopher. He looks like Santa Claus almost exactly, but he was writing about where religion comes from and why it's made up.
You know what I want to say, which is popping in my head right now, is the truth be told, I had an experience recently that made me have compassion for the atheists. I read a book that I loved, and I should probably be specific and detailed.
Well, was it like a memoir type book by an
atheist? It was a book about, this is just so interesting. It was a book about a child who basically had close to a near-death experience. He was 3 years old when his appendix burst. And his dad is a preacher, and he wrote the story of this little boy's experience with being in heaven for a little bit.
Yeah, and this is a best-selling book, right?
Oh, okay. I didn't know people knew about it.
Yeah, it's
Heaven is Real or something.
Yeah, it's at the front of every Barnes & Noble.
Oh, who knew? Okay, yeah. Well, that's probably why I bought it. I was intrigued by it, and I loved it. It was just a beautiful, beautiful, moving story. And I believe this child's experience, absolutely. These are not stretches for me at all, but some of the things, there were a couple things near the end of the book that the child said that, like, hurt my feelings. Like, I almost feel like I could start crying. Because I do believe in Jesus, and I have a kind of a feeling about who Jesus is, not a lot of brainwashing. And then, like, there were parts in the book where he talks about getting really upset, the kid, after he's had this near-death experience, thinking that somebody's going to die without giving their life over to Jesus. And I realized, like, for a week, I just was, like, mad. I was, like, mad at God. I was just like, that cannot be the truth. Like, are you telling me? Are you freaking telling me that somebody has to believe in Jesus in order to go to heaven? Like, F you, MF. I'm trying to be good, Jose.
Yeah.
I was so angry because I really believe this child's story. I really believe the dad's story. And I was like, that just hurts me. Like, there's no way. And so I had to sit and have a little chat with God. And I realized I was kind of turning away from God for a little while. And so I had a little chat with God and, you know, told him what was on my mind. And then I felt better. And you know what? That person's experience is that person's experience. And I am just not buying that for half a second. I don't know why he had that experience, but I don't know if that story was clear or not. But so it gave me a real, the essence, the important piece of the story is it gave me an understanding of how someone can be so hurt by the horrible toxic brainwashing around religion, which has nothing to do with, in my opinion, it just has nothing to do with truth. It just has nothing to do with truth. And of course you want to turn away from that. That's BS. Who wouldn't want to turn away from that? Yeah. But it's the whole throwing the baby out with bathwater. It's like, I'm not sure that that's the full truth, you guys. Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, the sort of the pain that people can run into with brainwashing or with certain messages. And I'm reminded there's a local group in Chapel Hill and Carrboro and Durham called the Recovering from Religion Meetup.
Yeah.
And I know about it because I do have atheist friends.
Yeah.
I'm plugged into that community. And the groups that come there sort of need some healing because they sort of got scared out of spirituality.
Absolutely.
By a certain preacher or parenting style.
It's totally real. I mean, can you imagine just like one little snippet, like teaching your kids about hell? I mean, that's like massive trauma. That's massive trauma right there, in my opinion.
Yeah, the style, the imagery and the suffering that...
And all the things you can do to go to hell. Like, let's not even... You know, that is crazy. And I just took out a swear word for your benefit.
You're doing a great job.
For somebody who talks to God and angels, I love swearing.
That is perfectly fine with me, but not with the FCC.
Right,
unfortunately.
I understand.
The FCC beings over wherever they are. I don't think they're listening to WCR. Our guest this hour on Psych Talk has been Anu Broad. So Anu Broad is a performer for Trans Actors, which is the longest running active improvisational company in the South. She also does other acting, including performing at the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland in 2011. She's also a spiritual counselor and intuitive. And we've been talking about all that and much more. And we had a really cool call-in this hour on Psych Talk. So Anu, where can people find out more about you?
Cool. So I don't have a website yet, and I hope to have one soon. But like, if somebody was intrigued and wanted to get a reading or wanted to take classes, they can find me on Facebook under Anu Tree Broad, B-R-O-D. I don't think there's any others out there, Anu Tree Broad. Just friend me or message me and I can give you more information. And one day I'm going to have a website.
Great. Anu Tree Broad, tree as in trees.
Yep, trees.
Nature. Yep.
Yeah.
Easy enough. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you. This is so fun.
I've had a lot of fun too.
Good.